Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. We are still going through the Massachusetts ratification debates. I believe we're going to be done today. We've got, I think, just three citations to cover. And then we're going to move into New York. I'm going to go ahead and dispatch or kind of get rid of New York sooner than later, because typically it's the last one I do, but it's so lackluster, and I'll get into why it's lackluster. And you'll find that Hamilton's comments in the Federalist Papers are far more direct than his comments in the ratification debates. And I'll get into that as well. And it really marks the character of the man more so than it does the, you know, his overall work and so forth. Like I said, I'll get into that. But what I want you to do is I want you to understand that as of the 29th of March, and we already have all of these shows up. So if you download the 29th of March and every show since then till now, you're going to be able to compile what we would call kind of like an audiobook of the ratification debates, barring some of these little monologues or, you know, lead-ins and some of the editorializing. But you will not be able to get this kind of information consolidated into a little condensed library or like a Reader's Digest version of the ratification debates to this detail anywhere else. I mean, there have been some scholars that have kind of written a little bit about the ratification debates, but not given you the type of information and details so that you clearly understand how they defined the Constitution and the terms and definitions of the clauses and what these things meant in the Constitution. As you know, this show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org as well as RepublicReview.org, and you are listening to the only show that's going to give you the academic evidence of how we've gotten into this mess and academic-based solutions on the only way we are going to be able to save this Constitution. There's lots of things that need to be done, and there's lots of people doing good things. We're going to talk about some of that, too, but unless the states step in and force the federal government into compliance, we are doomed. It doesn't matter if you take the party back. It doesn't matter if, you know, the Constitution Party becomes legitimate. None of this stuff matters if the state legislators do not do their job and force the federal government into compliance. That's why the key focus for everything that we are doing, whether that be in the party, whether that be, you know, in the militia, whether that be, you know, down in these grassroots meetings and building constitutional counties and so forth. And we've talked a little bit about this before, but if the focus is not obtaining compliance from every level of government of the U.S. Constitution, then we are failing, because that has to be the end goal. I mean, it's nice to have a, you know, a goal of taking back the party. It's nice to have, you know, and be able to do that. But then what? Well, we want to kind of wrap our arms around, you know, conservative values or constitutional values. No, we have to be very clear and concise and succinct in demanding full compliance to the Constitution. And so with that, as you know, we're going to be going to Red State Talk Radio. And one of the things I just need to kind of prepare you for, and I usually don't do this, but I don't have, and so I need to actually get some kind of revenue kicked in so that I can cover some of my costs, because bottom line, I'm not going to be able to cover some of the costs, the travel costs, for going to Red State, or actually the Red Pill Expo, and doing some of the other things to travel, to actually working with state legislators. And and so I think the only thing I can offer is, you know, and I don't peddle my books, But if you would like to get signed copies of my books, go to my Mobius Strip Press page, and you can buy direct from PayPal. I would just ask you to go ahead and buy the blue book, the main book, book number one, Whose Constitution Is It Anyway? And if you do, I will give you the second book, and I'll sign both of them for you. And what we want to do is we want to actually get, and hopefully I can do this as well, is I can get a miniature CD to be able to put all of my articles on, you know, on disc for you so that you can have them. Not that you can't have them right now. They're already on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. But what we want to do is we want to make sure that you have all of the content necessary so you can start understanding how big the problem is and what we have to do to move forward, period. And so we have a comment line, 425-270-5416. We encourage your comment 24/7. Don't worry, it will not wake me up. It is a phone that rings in a very dark, empty room where no one is there to hear it ring. Nobody's there is going to be listening to anything you have to say. So be cool, be calm, collect, you know, and get your thoughts together, articulate what you want to say, and we will re-air that, your question, and answer your question. And like I said, if it's one of those questions that really has some legs to it, that, you know, it's going to require a conversation, we will work with you, call you back, and do an interview. Anyway, we do ask you that you participate and help expanding the listenership. The message is clear. The message is probably the most important message you can hear. We cover everybody's efforts that are doing good things that work with us, that dovetail with what we are doing. We're about uniting. We are not about trying to create a group think of what we do and you must follow us and we want you to pay for, you know, your membership and all of those things. Because we don't have that, because we don't have any mechanism for, you know, people to, you know, subscribe or become members, the only method I have in trying to make revenue is by selling my books. And I have not done this in a long time. I mean, we have a GoFundMe and other things, but I think that I would much rather give you something for something than, you know, just having you contribute money. I believe that you deserve something. So what I'm doing is I'm giving you an offer. If you buy the first book, we will give you the second book, and we will give you a disc with all of our content, all of the different articles that we have out there. And we'll probably even give you some articles we've never published that are really in the raw, but I think you'll get the understanding of how important some of this stuff is. You know, like the fact that the federal government created a godless secular church underneath our nose years and years and years ago. And then they started making doctrinal edicts that you cannot teach these things, you have to teach our things. And this is how far we've gone down this slope. So anyway, like I said, what we're doing is we're going to be covering Massachusetts, and today we're really going to put a fork in it. We should be done with the three citations we have left. Our next state up is New York, and I'm going to tell you, Virginia's going to take a couple of weeks, at least 10 days. New York will take a couple of days, and North Carolina will take a few days. So we'll probably have this content rolling and going along probably into May. But anyway, what I'm going to do, though, is at the end of the citations today on Massachusetts, there's some things I want to tell you. Plus, I want to give you some news on, you know, how my recovery is going, those types of things. And we will be back on all of that once we're done with the Massachusetts debates. But so more importantly, let's kind of pick up where we left off. And so this is, and what day are we on here? This is on February 2nd, and this is 1788. And Mr. Darvis, or Dr. Jarvis, I should say, actually kind of stood up and said, hey, actually, no, this is Reverend Mr. Backus, because Mr. Jarvis speaks, or Dr. Jarvis speaks after him. And here's the question that he has. And this is pretty important because you got to understand this is the Puritans. This is their mind model. These are the things that they're concerned about regarding the Constitution. He says, Mr. President, I have said very little in this honorable convention, but I now beg leave to offer a few thoughts upon some points in the Constitution proposed to us. And I shall begin with the exclusion of religious tests. Many appear to be much concerned about it, but nothing more is evident, both in reason and the Holy Scriptures, than that religion is ever a matter between God and individuals. And therefore, no man or men can impose any religious tests without invading the essential prerogatives of our Lord Jesus Christ. Ministers first assumed this power under the Christian name, and then Constantine approved of the practice when he adopted the profession of Christianity, and I'm going to throw in here, for the kingdom of Rome, which was a godless, as a matter of fact, kind of like Egypt. Constantine considered himself the god of gods, or just like the pharaoh of Egypt considered himself god of gods, as an engine of state policy. And let history of all nations be searched from that day to this. And so we'll pick it up from right where we left off and let the history of all nations, so that we can kind of keep going. But this is kind of interesting because if you understand every state during the Bill of Rights and seeking amendments to the Constitution, every state wanted to have religious tests. And here is a reverend providing a contrary view. We'll be right back after this. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416. Okay, so, excuse me, I'm going to just start off, like I said, where we just started reading. And this is what he was saying when we went into break. And let the history of all nations be searched from that day to this, and it will appear that the imposing of religious tests have been the greatest engine of tyranny in the world. And I rejoice to see so many gentlemen who are now giving in their rights of conscience in this great and important matter. some serious minds discover a concern least if all religious tests should be excluded, the Congress would hereafter establish popery or some other tyrannical way of worship. But it is most certain that no such way of worship can be established without any religious tests. And so they'd have to be able to insert that religious test. Much, sir, hath, and then he goes on about slavery, and he goes, much, sir, hath been said about the importation of slaves into this country. I believe that according to my capacity, no man abhors that wicked practice more than I do. I'm giving you a snapshot of how these men at this point in time were looking at slavery. Remember, it was really only South Carolina and Georgia, and North Carolina touched on it a little bit, but those were the only three states that had really anything positive to say about it. I would gladly make use of all laws means towards the abolishing of slavery in all parts of the land. But lest us consider where we are, and we are doing, in the Articles of Confederation, no provision was made to hinder the importation of slaves into any of these states, but a door is now open hereafter to do it. And each state is at liberty now to abolish slavery as soon as they please. And let us remember our former connection with Great Britain, from whom many in our land think we ought to have revolted. How did they carry on the slave trade? I know that the Bishop of Gloucester, in an annual sermon in London on February 1776, endeavored to justify their tyrannical claims of power over us by casting the reproach of the slave trade upon Americans. Did you get this, folks? Do you understand that this was a diabolical plan from Britain? You want your reparations? I mean, reparations are against the Constitution because ex post facto laws and bills of attainder are unconstitutional and illegal. However, there is something to be said to go after Britain and say, you owe for us, because here they were clearly called out by Thomas Jefferson and the Declaration of Independence, and right here, that they were basically using this as a tyrannical form over us. But at the close of the war, the Bishop of Chester, in an annual sermon in February 1783, ingenuously owned that their nation is the most deeply involved in the guilt of that trade of any nation in the world, and also that they have treated their slaves in the West Indies worse than the French or Spaniards have done theirs. Thus, slavery grows more and more odious through the world, and as an honorable gentleman said some days ago, though we cannot say that slavery is struck with an apoplexy, yet we may hope it will die with a consumption, quote, and a close quote. And a main source, sir, of that iniquity hath been an abuse of the covenant of circumcision, which gave the seed of Abraham to destroy the inhabitants of Canaan and to take their houses, vineyards, and all their estates as their own, and also to buy and hold others as servants. And as Christian privileges are greater than those of Hebrews, where many have imagined that they have a right to seize upon the lands of the heathen and to destroy or enslave them as far as they could extend their power. And from thence the mystery of iniquity carried many into the practice of making merchandise of slaves and the souls of men. But all ought to remember that when God promised the land of Canaan to Abraham and his seed, he let him know that they were not to take possession of that land until the iniquity of the Amorites was full, and then they did it under the immediate direction of heaven, and they were as real executors of the judgment of God upon those heathens as any person ever was an executor of a criminal justly condemned. And in doing it, they were as as any person ever was an executor, and in doing it, they were not allowed to invade the lands of the Edomites, who sprang from Esau, who was not only of the seed of Abraham, but was born at the same birth with Israel. And yet they were not of that church. Neither were Israel allowed to invade the lands of the Moabites or of the children of Ammon, who were of the seed of Lot. And no officer in Israel had any legislative power such as were immediately inspired. Even David, the man after God's own heart, had no legislative power, but only as he was inspired from above, and he expressly called a prophet in the New Testament. And we are to remember that Abraham and his seed for 400 years had no warrant to admit any stranger into that church, but by buying him as a servant with money. And it was a great privilege to be bought and adopted into a religious family for 7 years and then to have their freedom. So remember, we hear in the Bible that under the plan of God and in Israel, that they were allowed to have slaves. But after 7 years, they were to actually offer freedom to those slaves, and they became a citizen of Israel. Kind of like an indentured servant working off their, their debt in 7 years. And some of those people chose to maintain their slavery. They could go back into slavery. But every 7 years, they were offered their freedom, and many went free. And that covenant was expressly repealed in various parts of the New Testament, and particularly in the first epistle to the Corinthians, where it is said, "Ye are bought with a price, therefore glorify God in your body and in your spirit, which are God's." And again, circumcision is nothing and uncircumcision is nothing but keeping of the commandments of God. Ye are bought with a price, but not ye the servants of men. Thus the gospel sets up all men upon a level very contrary to the declaration of an honorable gentleman in this house that, quote, "the Bible was contrived for the advantage of particular order of men," close quote. Another great advantage, sir, in this constitution before us is it's excluding all titles of nobility or hereditary succession of power, which has been a main engine of tyranny in foreign countries. But the American Revolution was built upon the principle that all men are born with an equal right to liberty and property, and that officers have no right to any power but that what is fairly given them by the consent of the people. And in the Constitution now proposed to us, a power is reserved to the people constitutionally to reduce every officer again to a private station. And what a guard is this against their invasion of other rights or abusing of other powers. Such a door is now open for the establishment of righteous government and for the securing equal liberty as never was before opened to any people on earth. So, see, that's kind of an interesting purview or this perspective that Reverend Bacchus had regarding the Constitution and his look at it. Now, another Reverend Stillman actually gets up and he starts talking about powers, abuses of powers, and so forth regarding the Constitution. And this is pretty powerful. "The powers that are granted to Congress by this instrument are great and extensive, but, sir, they are defined and limited, and in my judgment, sufficiently checked, which I shall prove before I sit down. These powers have been subject of long and ingenious debate, but the arguments have been made use of against delegating these powers to the general government prove too much, being applicable to all delegated power. I mean the possible abuse of it. The very term government implies a supreme controlling power somewhere, a power to coerce. Whenever coercion shall be necessary, of which necessity government must be the judge, this is admitted. If so, the power may be abused." Every gentleman must confess that we cannot give a power to do good, but it may be abused to do evil. If a merchant commits the care of a ship and cargo to the master, he may dispose of both and appropriate the money of his to his own use. If we raise a body of men and put arms into their hands for our defense, they may turn them against us and destroy us. All of these things prove, however, that in order to guard as much as possible against the abuse of those powers we delegate to government, there ought to be sufficient checks on them. Every precaution should be used to secure the liberties of the people on the one hand and not render government inefficient on the other. And so when we come back, we're going to, you know, wrap up these comments from Reverend Stillman, and then we have one more that will wrap up Massachusetts. So please stay tuned. We'll be right back after these promos. Thank you so much.
Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcasts and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Mobius Strip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Mobius Strip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416. Okay, so moving on, this is what he says. I believe, sir, such security is provided in this Constitution. If not, no consideration shall induce me to give my voice in its favor. But the people are secured by the following circumstances. First, all the offices in Congress are elective, not hereditary. The president and senators are to be chosen by the interposition of the legislatures of the several states, who are the representatives and guardians of the people, whose honor and interest will lead them in all human probability to have good men placed in the general government. I want you to be clear here. He just pointed out that the president and senators are to be chosen by the interposition of legislatures of the several states. Second, the representatives in Congress are to be chosen every second year by the people of the several states. Consequently, it lies with the people themselves to say who shall represent them. If it will then be their own fault if they do not choose the best men in the Commonwealth. Who are Congress then? They are ourselves, the men of our choices in whom we can confide, whose interests is inseparably connected with our own. Why is it then that the gentlemen speak of Congress as some foreign body, as a set of men who will seek every opportunity to enslave us? Such insinuations are repugnant to the spirit of the Constitution. But as you know, we have migrated away from a government that abides by the Constitution, that a government that is using the public purse and violating the Constitution to ultimately buy and enslave people by doing, it's all unconstitutional. Anyway, but a worthy gentleman from Middleborough has told us that though they may be good men when chosen, they may become corrupt. They may so, nor is it in the power of angels or men to prevent it. But should this be the case? The Constitution has made provisions for such an event. When it happens, we shall know what method to adopt in order to bring them to punishment. In all governments where offices are elective, there ever has been and there ever will be a competition of interest. They who are in office wish to keep in, they who are out to get in, the probable consequence of which will be that they who are already in place will be attentive to the rights of the people because they know that they are dependent on them for a future, or for a future election, which can be secured by good behavior only. Besides, they are out of office. Okay, because though, or actually he says this, besides, they who are out of office will watch them who are in with a most critical eye in order to discover and expose their malcontent, if guilty of any, so that they may step into their places. Every gentleman knows the influence that a desire to obtain a place or the fear of losing it hath on mankind. Mr. Borg tells us that towards the close of 7 years for which the representatives are chosen in the British Parliament, they become exceedingly polite to the people. Why? Because they know there is an approaching election depending. This competition of interest, therefore, between those persons who are in and those who are out of office will ever form one important check to the abuse of powers of our representatives. Third, every 2 years there will be a revolution in the general government in favor of the people. At the expiration of 2 years, there will be a new choice of representatives. At the expiration of the second 2 years, there will be a new choice of president and representatives, and the expiration of the third term, making 6 years from the commencement of Congress, there will be new choices of senators and representatives. We all know, sir, that power thus frequently reverting to the people will prove a security to their liberties and a most important check of the power of the general government. And so one of the things that I think a lot of people miss is that the power in the people is through the elective process. We have a representative government. We don't have and shouldn't have voter initiatives and those types of things. And so we have to start holding our public officials accountable. Anyway, he goes on and says, fourth, Congress, and this is the important one, Congress can make no laws that will oppress the people which they will not equally involve themselves in the oppression. In other words, I've said this already in the Massachusetts debate. It gets repeated here that Congress cannot make any law and immune themselves from it. They must suffer the same under that same oppression and tyranny. It was defined right here. So every time Congress has passed a law and immune themselves from it, they have directly violated the terms of the Constitution. You don't need a judge to tell you whether it's right or wrong. It's right here. It has been defined. It has been stipulated that they cannot do these things. Not just the Massachusetts representatives and senators, all representatives and senators, because the federal government must treat the states equally, and their behavior and relationship between the government and the states must be uniform. Therefore, all of these people who have these golden parachutes and retirements and all of these things, I'm sorry, they can't have those things. They cannot give themselves immunity and grant themselves privileges. They must be equally oppressed. What possible motive then can Congress have to abuse their power? Can any man suppose that they will be so lost to their own interest as to abuse their power, knowing at the same time that they equally involve themselves in the difficulty? It is a most improbable supposition. This would be like a man's cutting off his nose to spite his face. I place this, sir, among the securities of liberty of my fellow citizens and rejoice in it. Congress guarantees to every state in the Union a republican form of government and engaged to protect them against all foreign and domestic enemies. That is, that it hath been justly observed by the honorable gentleman, Mr. Adams, near me, of known and tried abilities as a politician, each state shall choose such republican form of government as they please. And Congress solemnly engage themselves to protect it from every kind of violence, whether of faction at home or enemies abroad. It is an admirable security of the people at large, as well as the several governments of the states. Consequently, the general government cannot swallow up the local governments, as some gentlemen have suggested. Their existence is dependent upon each other and must stand or fall together. Should Congress ever attempt to the destruction of the particular legislatures, they would be in the same predicament with Samson, who overthrew the house in which the Philistines were making sport at his expense. Them he killed indeed, but he buried himself in the ruins. 6. Another check in favor of the people in this, that the Constitution provides for the impeachment, trial, and punishment of every officer in Congress who shall be guilty of malconduct, which such a prospect will, who will dare to abuse the powers vested in him by the people. Having thus considered several of the checks to the powers of Congress, which are interwoven in the Constitution, we will now suppose the worst that can take place in consequence of this adoption. I mean that it shall be found in some of its parts oppressive to the people. We still have the demure resort. It may be amended. It is not, like the laws of the Medes and the Persians, immutable. The fifth article provides for amendments. It has been said it will be difficult after its ratification to procure any alterations. By no means, sir, was this a weighty reason. It is a general government, and as such will have a general influence. All states in the Union will feel the difficulty, and feeling it will readily concur in adopting the method provided by the Constitution, and having once made the trial experience will teach us what amendments are necessary. Viewing the Constitution in this light, I stand ready to give my vote for it without any amendments at all. Yet if the amendments proposed by Your Excellency will tend to conciliation, I readily admit them, not as a condition of acceptance, but as a matter of recommendation only, knowing that blessed are the peacemakers. I am ready, sir, to submit my life, my liberty, my family, my property, and as far as my vote will go, the interest of my constituents to this general government. After all, if this Constitution was as perfect as the sacred volume is, it would not secure the liberties of the people unless they watch their own liberties. Nothing written on paper will do this. It is therefore necessary that people should keep a watchful eye over, and not an over-jealous eye on, their rulers. and I will take a break right there. We'll wrap up his comments as soon as we come back. Thank you so much. If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and the 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires two-thirds of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, so I'm going to kind of pick it up with the beginning of the last sentence. It is therefore necessary that the people should keep a watchful eye, or a watchful, not an overjealous eye, on their rulers, and that they should give all due encouragement to our colleges, schools of learning, etc., so that knowledge may be diffused through every part of our country. Ignorance and slavery, knowledge and freedom are inseparably connected. While Americans remain in their present enlightened condition and warmly attached to the cause of liberty, they cannot be enslaved. Should the general government become so lost to all sense of honor and the freedom of the people as to attempt to enslave them, they who are the descendants of a race of men who have dethroned kings would make an American Congress tremble, strip them of their public honors, and reduce them to the lowest state of degradation. I hope you understand this, that even though it's been centuries, we have dethroned kings. We have it in our genetic makeup to do this. We just have to finally commit in so doing. Now, the final thing that I'm going to read are the recommended amendments. This is what they sent forward, and I'm just going to give you a few of these. First, that it be explicitly declared that all powers not expressly delegated by the aforesaid Constitution are reserved to the several states to be by them exercised. Secondly, that there shall be one representative to every 30,000 persons according to the census mentioned in the Constitution until the whole number of representatives amounts to 200. Thirdly, that Congress do not exercise the powers vested in them by the fourth section of the first article, but in cases where a state shall neglect or refuse to make the regulations therein mentioned or shall make regulations subversive to the rights of the people to a free and equal representation in Congress agreeable to the Constitution. Fourthly, that Congress do not lay direct taxes, but when the monies arising from the imposts and excises are insufficient for the public exigencies, nor then until Congress shall have first made a requisition upon the states to assesses, levy, and pay the respective proportion of such requisitions agreeably to the consensus fixed in the said Constitution in such way and manner as the legislatures of the states shall think best, and in such case, if any state shall neglect or refuse to pay its proportion pursuant to such requisition, then Congress may assess and levy such state's proportion together with interest thereon at the rate of 6% per annum, or 6% a year. That's a lot. From the time of the payment prescribed in such requisitions. Fifthly, that Congress erect no company with exclusive advantages of commerce. In other words, giving themselves the advantage. Sixthly, that no person shall be tried for any crime by which he may incur an infamous punishment or loss of life until he be first indicted by a grand jury, except in such cases as may arise in the government and regulation of the land and naval forces. Seventhly, the Supreme Judicial Federal Court shall have no jurisdiction of cases between citizens of different states unless the matter in dispute, whether concerned the realty or personality, be of the value of $3,000 at the least, nor shall the federal judicial powers extend to any action between citizens of different states where the matter in dispute, whether it concern the reality or personality, is not of the whole value of $1,500 at the least. Eighthly, in civil actions between citizens of different states, every issue of fact arising in the actions at common law shall be tried by a jury if the parties or either of them request it. Ninthly, shall at no time consent that any person holding an office of trust or profit under the United States shall accept of any or of a title of nobility or any other title of office from any king, prince, or foreign state. And so there you go. Those were the recommended amendments that they kind of sent down, and then they went through this. And ironically, so there was a 10-point deficit before John Hancock submitted this concept of providing amendments. In other words, they were going to fail. Hancock understood this. Hancock made his point and said, hey, let's give ourselves an opportunity to send in these amendments. In so doing, it brought John Adams on board and other men to where they not only made up the 10, they actually picked up, I believe, another 10. So they moved 20 men from the negative to accepting the Constitution. And moving forward, they set a precedent. They set a standard that states provide and recommend their own amendments that they would suggest to the Constitution. And from this point on, and as a matter of fact, as I read some of the state ratification debates like South Carolina and so forth, when we go through those recommended amendments, it seems like they start repeating each other because they start kind of calling for the Bill of Rights or making those same things or calling for amendments that we already have in the Bill of Rights. And it's interesting that they make sure that they maintain the ambiguous reserved rights like the 10th Amendment and the 9th Amendment, that all powers not delegated are reserved to the states. And in so doing, they kind of create a very well-defined line of saying, well, these are all the powers we want to protect ourselves from, religion, these things, and so forth. Because they realize by going down that path, if they didn't list it, then they couldn't be protected. Well, that's not the case, though. because on the opposite side, the Constitution still never granted general powers. So if the power wasn't delegated, they still do not have the ability. This is the whole reason why I tell you that the need for a Bill of Rights never surfaced until the Civil War. So with that, I got about 3 minutes. So let me give you a little bit of some good news. I know that there are those who are, very supportive, and I really do appreciate it. I did have a hip replacement, and that went, as well as could be expected. I'm mending well. It looks like I will be going to Red Pill Expo, so I'm hoping to see you there. And we're trying to connect with as many state legislators as possible. So what we would ask is that you ask your state legislator to please go to the Red Pill Expo in Rapid City just to make point of meeting the other legislatures that we are actually calling for with Reclaiming the Republic, the National Liberty Alliance, the We the People Foundation, the Unifiers on the Constitution. We want to have a separate meeting. We're looking for a venue. The information will be coming forth on this. But what we want to do is we want to be able to get all these good men and women who are willing and ready to take a stand with the federal government and get them smart and supported. What we want to do is we're going to come with a lot of information for these people so that they can turn right around and get engaged and take their party back so that they can actually take not just the party, but take the state. They can get rid of the rhinos, and we have plans for all of this. We have plans for all of this. And so there's going to be a lot of people that are going to be going to Red Pill Expo more for Reclaiming the Republic than probably Red Pill Expo, even though there will be probably more people there for Red Pill Expo, but there'll be more people than you think that are there working for Reclaiming the Republic and getting involved in every way of everything they possibly can. I want to tell you about this gentleman that I spoke to literally on Thursday, the 22nd of April, the day I'm recording the show, which was yesterday. I had a conversation with Dan Schultz, and Dan Schultz has had a great success in getting some states moving in the right direction. And so I'm hoping and I'm praying that we can work together. He's not trying to create an organization. He's trying to take over an organization. He's trying to take over the Republican Party. And I know it can be done. We've done it locally where we've injected the militia, 3%ers and those types of people. So anyway, we're moving forward and we're getting more and more people on board with actually doing this. What's really important is that we just don't put warm bodies in these seats. We put people who love the Constitution in these seats. And what we want to offer them is we want to offer them the education on the Constitution so that they can better support the Constitution, better support the party, and better support the reclaiming of our republic. And so I hope you're getting this. I hope you understand this. But we will talk a little bit more about the opportunity of buying our books, or my books, the first and second book. And so if you don't want to use PayPal, send me a check and make the check out for Mobius Strip Press, LLC. And we will send you the books and so forth. But anyway, we'll talk more about it in the next show. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.